Warning, the podcast Under the Stairs is not safe for work. We'll feature movie spoilers and language which most listeners may find offensive. Brought to you in conjunction with Legion Podcast Network. Welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. Hi everyone and welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. This is episode 138. I'm your host Duncan McLeish and welcome to the show. Episode 138 continues our three-part look at the Maniac Cop trilogy. This is the second installment looking at Maniac Cop 2. I'll be joined with my guest that's doing all three episodes with me, the fantastic Andy Blockley, up after the first break. However, before we get into that, as always, some housekeeping at the start of this episode. This is another three-episode Teapots week. That's right, those episodes just keep on coming, ladies and gents. So this one is obviously your Monday episode. God willing, our Thursday episode will be the Baz Takeover Show. If that episode doesn't come out on Thursday, it will definitely be the following Monday and will be replaced with a Challenge Teapots Listener Challenge Movie Club episode instead, feeling that that will come the following Thursday. And this Sunday coming will be the fourth disc in the 88 Films Italian Collection Reviews. So we'll be looking at Blast Fighter, so that's coming this Sunday. Also want to just quickly at the start of this episode thank everyone who has supported our brand new merch page. That's right, we have officially finally taken the finger out of our asses and got to creating a proper merch page for you guys out there to buy some of the cool stuff we've had created for the podcast. Now, you can go across and visit it by checking the show notes where I've listed the website, or you can go to teapotscast.bigcartel, that's bigcartel.com, and that'll take you to our official merch page. Or you can go through the website, teapotscast.com, click on the button that says merch and you'll be transported there anyway. Currently up for sale at the moment are the two posters that we've had created for the podcast. So buy them separately or in a bundled deal. And our brand new Harry the Pug T-Pugs enamel pin, which is about halfway sold out now, so I really wouldn't waste time on that one. All the prices are up there. You click through, it'll give you postage. If you want to buy more than one, by all means buy more than one. Some of our listeners have joined up to save shipping in the States, so if they live in the same town, cities, etc., they're just ordering from one person and then divvying it out when they arrive stateside. So yeah, whatever makes you happy, but that page is up there just now. When items are gone, we'll start looking at putting up brand new merch. I'm really going to try and get my shit in gear to try and get some really cool merch up on the page this year. A brand new poster, potentially another enamel pin and other stuff, which is pretty cool. So yeah, I'm going all out this year to create some really cool merch for you guys to buy, which will help support the show. So there we go, that's all that plug-in done at the start. teapotscast.bigcartel.com, and three episodes of the podcast Under the Stairs coming this week. Which means, with all that foofara out the way, we can jump on to the meat and bones of this podcast Under the Stairs episode. So I'm going to take my first break just now. You're going to hear promos for shows that I love. You are going to hear the trailer for Maniac Cop 2. When I return, myself and my fantastic, beautiful guest, Andy Blockley, will be looking at that movie. All that and more coming right up, right after this.
Hey, Paul, what I was thinking is that we need to cut a promo.
Yeah, I've been working on some ideas. It's just I don't really know where to go with it exactly. What if I got like a filter where we could just kind of talk normally and we can have kind of a script, but then yes. I can like filter it so that one of us will have one kind of voice and then one will have the other.
I want to put my request. Make me as Freddy Krueger. Can you do that?
Maybe instead of the voices, what if we tried to like write a skit, develop a whole thing, and we have a backstory? And but well, I don't know. That might be kind of too long. So
well, like screeching cars and explosions and fireworks and
yeah. Well, what about?
I like it.
Maybe instead of you know doing a filter, we could just like reach out to Robert Englund himself and maybe.
Ooh.
He can, you know, just record a promo for us sometime. Do you think? I mean, we might have to like raise some money.
We can do a Kickstarter, and we could just throw it out to like Robert Englund, and you know, just all kinds of actors, and I think people will do that.
I think.
Sure. Why not?
Well, you know what? I don't know. Maybe we're overthinking this whole thing. How about if we just tell people where to find us?
I like that.
You can find us at Who Will Survive on iTunes, Stitcher, on the Legion Podcast Network, and on the Raw Live and Unedited Podcasting Network. Also on Facebook and Instagram under the same name.
Oh, wait. Can we do it underwater with piranhas killing me?
That would kind of be brutal.
And if that doesn't work, then you can do the regular promo.
All right. Well, just get in the water and I'll go get some fish.
All right, cool.
Hey. Feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast cure-all, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of
They Must Be Destroyed on Sight!
As needed, and let the hosts, Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, chin cough, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pott's disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
Officer Cordell is dead. People are safe to walk the streets again. Or are they?
Must be visiting hours, because my friend is back!
The nightmare has returned.
With a great big cop, 6'3", maybe more.
Shooting Cordell's only good for getting his attention.
Teresa Mallory's dead because she knew the truth.
What's the matter, Commissioner? You finally believe in ghosts?
He's still alive.
Maniac Cop 2. Robert Davi, Licensed to Kill. Claudia Christian, The Hidden. Michael Lerner, The Postman Always Rings Twice. Bruce Campbell, The Evil Dead. And Leo Rossi, The Accused. Star in Maniac Cop 2.
And welcome back. So you've just heard the trailer for this feature movie review of this episode 138 of the podcast Under the Stairs. This is our second installment of the Maniac Cop trilogy. And joining me on the look at these three movies is my good buddy Andy Blockley. How you doing, Andy?
How you doing, mate? Yeah, I'm pretty good. Ironic that we're talking about a zombie and it's Easter.
There's a theme here, isn't there?
There's a theme. It was St. Patrick's Day last time we spoke, and now this.
Yeah, we're recording this episode on Easter Sunday for release on Easter Monday, and right enough, we go full Jason zombie in this one, which is kind of cool. We were just talking off air, and I had remarked that I was kind of blown away by how much I actually really enjoyed this movie. Like, really, really enjoyed. Like, I remember seeing Maniac Cop 2 probably when it came out on VHS. Must have been. and thinking it was all right. And I think I've seen it maybe once or twice since. And my kind of overriding opinion coming into this one was, wasn't as good as the first one, but it was all right. Watch it this time around. I had a fucking ball watching this movie.
It's pretty good, isn't it? Like, some of the things that it does, like, I can't... It's like, absolutely fucking ridiculous, but what do you want? Another retread of the first one again? No, we've got to do something different, and we've got to go a bit further and take everything a bit too far.
Yeah.
Perfect. What more do you want from a fucking sequel to an 80s movie?
Yeah, I think...
The Police Station Massacre, by the way, this is the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Not the one in the first movie. this one is literally lifted straight from the fucking Terminator, isn't it? It's great.
It's, like, they're so, like... Watching this movie, like, what I kind of loved about it is how much it feels like we have handed the keys from the 80s to the 90s in this movie. So yeah. That, you know, when horror's no longer the thing, kind of goofy, cheesy horror's no longer the thing. What people like is action movies.
Yeah.
Because it's like all about the action in the early 90s. So let's do like an action movie, but let's just tie it in, which is essentially what you get in this movie. Like,
yeah.
And there's so much, like, the way, once again, like some of the themes, like, because what I want to do with discussing this movie is kind of, we said before, we're going to look maybe a bit more forensically about the story and see at what point things just become shit.
Yeah.
And I'm now very much of the opinion it must have been the third movie, because, like you said, this feels like a really good continuation. It picks up straight from when the first movie finishes. It brings our characters back along with them. It's directed by the same director, written by the same writer. The score is the same. It's been brought over as well. And it pretty much picks up in the aftermath. But not only is it doing all that as well, which is kind of cool, it's also at this point saying, you know what? What we're also going to do is we're going to start to maybe tweak the Cordell story and flesh it out a bit more in this movie, which I kind of love. So in the first movie, he wrought his revenge. He killed those that had wronged him. And he was suspected dead, but they never found the body. In this one, there's one last guy. So he got to the chief of police, the commissioner, but he didn't get to the governor. I think that's maybe where we are in this one. So so he's returned to rot his revenge on the governor. And we pick up a bit of time later, Bruce Campbell's back over. I forget the woman's name, who was his partner, but she's back over, and instantly we're introduced to just like here are your new we're going to be handing the keys to this movie over to a couple of new characters here. So we're introduced to Robert Davies in this movie as Lieutenant Sean McKinley, who might have the best entrance in a movie of all time.
Right, is he doing some kind of zombie Jason from Jason Takes Manhattan? Because brilliant stunt. I'm loving the jumping out of a window, landing on a car, and landing on the floor.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's brilliant. Like, you would never see that today. That's some Jackie Chan shit there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, obviously, like you say, our main character kind of comes into frame and shoots the guy. Who threw him out of the window?
Yeah, don't know.
Because, like, he literally lands on the floor, gets up, and then gets shot. There's no way he's managed to teleport himself from inside that window. So yeah, it's just funny to me that, because it doesn't make any sense, but it kind of doesn't need to. But that kind of pretty much sets you up for this is what the film is going to be like. There's going to be a lot of shit that doesn't make sense. A guy comes, gets launched out of a window, and then shot by what I'm assuming is the same guy. He's managed to teleport around. Brilliant.
The camera pans around Tom, and he's standing full trench coat, fucking fedora hat, like steam coming from the ground. All that's missing is the bluesy sax. You know, in the background, as this camera pans out, gun held out like dirty fucking Harry, like that. Like, after he's done the shot, the gun's still out, held in for about a good 10 seconds. Robert Davi is Lieutenant Sean McKinley. I was like, fuck yes. I forgot he was in this movie.
Yeah. And he didn't kill him, does he? Because it's too much paperwork.
It's far too much paperwork. He's not.
Do you know how old he is?
In real life or in this movie?
In this movie. How old is he?
40s, maybe.
Okay, he's 39. I thought he looked about... Well, his face looks like it's fucking been put through a meat grinder. He looks about 50, doesn't he?
He's aged a lot since the Goonies.
It's mental, man. He's just a couple of years older than me. He must have had like a really difficult route to school uphill or something.
It's years working down the mines.
Yeah. But not only does he look like he's straight from like the 50s, even some of his lines, like when he's talking to the blonde cop after he thinks she's killed Bruce Campbell.
Yeah.
He's like, maybe she goes, I wouldn't kill him. I love him. And he's like, maybe, well, you loved him a little bit too much. See, what does that even mean? You loved him a little bit too much. I was like, what? Oh,
love,
hilarious.
Love,
yeah.
I don't know,
like,
if you
he's
know
so
that.
In the wrong fucking era, isn't he, by about 40 years.
But I kind of, once again, if you're going to go for it, if you're going to, because like in the previous movie, every cop was like an Irish beat cop.
Yeah.
You know
they're
what I mean?
All, they're all dead, obviously. There's none of them in this one.
Yeah, so they've all been replaced. They've all been replaced with kind of 1950s era PIs.
Yeah, because there's another cop as well. Like, I can't remember who he's talking to. And he's like, even if... Golly, I'm gonna do like getting all Italian and shit on some ground. I'm thinking, who are these cops? It's a completely different force now that we're dealing with.
It's a melting pot. That's what New York is. It's a melt. Well, is it New York, isn't it? It's a melting pot, a hodgepodge, Andy Blockley, of different people, and anyone can be a police officer. Anyone can be a police
Apparently
officer.
Apparently, so yeah.
Yeah, the only issue you have being a police officer is a maniac cop will kill you. Because our buddy is not dead. Well, he is dead, actually. He's come back. What I kind of love about this is, like, his face. Like, Robert Zadar has a big face, right?
Yeah.
And this one, he kind of has an Optimus Prime face. It's like a giant, like, it's like a giant...
He's got a grill. He's got a grill on his face and everything. Do you know what's really weird, right? That all the different people that see the maniac cop, nobody goes, what's wrong with his face?
No one reacts to the fact he's a fucking walking zombie.
Everyone
no
just
one.
Goes, oh, he's, all right, mate. Like, look at him. He looks like he literally looks like he's just been fucking dug up. And nobody, yeah, like you say, no one reacts. No one goes, that's a bit weird.
Yeah, oh, I love the fact, like, we'll touch on some of the really, really, really funny why you doing that moments later on in this movie. But like, so basically Robert Zadar as Matthew Cordell, the maniac cop, returns to continue his rampage. But first on his mind, he's got some revenge that he wants to take care of, and that comes in the kind of flavour of taking out Bruce Campbell, Jack Forrest character, and Laureen Landon, who was Teresa Mallory, who were the two cops that took him down in the previous movie.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where he's focusing. So we get a bit of time. Like, the movie... What I think the movie does really well for a sequel is it repeats a lot of the beats from the first movie, but changes them enough to make them feel kind of fresh.
Yeah.
So once again, within the first 10 minutes of this movie, we've had at least 1 to 2 deaths at the hands of the maniac cop or a cop.
Yeah.
So it's like that. Remember, this is the pace we're going for. It's a movie that's an hour and a half, and we're going to rush through this plot. So don't get too comfortable and don't think about it too much, because when you think about it too much, it won't make sense. So very, very quickly, by about the half an hour mark, Bruce Campbell and Laura Landon have been assigned to see... Officer Susan Riley, who is a psychiatrist of sorts.
Yeah.
Who kind of is given... She's given them the out. She's basically saying, all you have to do is say that you're wrong. It wasn't Cordell, and you can return to duty, which Campbell is all about. He's like, yeah, I can totally do that. And Mallory's like, no, he's still out there. And, like, Campbell's like that. Listen, we'll not get our pension. Like, not get anything if we don't just agree. And she's like,
so you can still think he's out there, just don't tell the psychologist he's out there. Simple.
Yeah, do it on the side, like a good cop. Create like a home studio with one of these things with different pictures and the red string that attached. Do that, but don't say it in front of the woman that can clear you to come back to work
Just literally saying. Just by signing a piece of paper. Just say it.
She's not for doing this at all. Bruce Campbell is kind of freeing himself of this, you know, Cordell's gone, don't need to worry about it anymore. And
Campbell went too far the other way because he signed a bit of paper and also went, yeah, he's dead. No, he isn't, mate. Like, no, he's not. He's forgotten.
He signed a bit of paper about that. Never need to worry about this again.
No, you do. It's that was just to keep your job, Bruce. You've still got to worry about the maniac cop coming for you.
Yeah, that's not how life works. You don't just write something down a bit of paper and it becomes true.
Imagine that.
I know. But Bruce Campbell gets a bit too complacent, decides to go and buy a paper from the only blind paper. How this guy runs a business is beyond me. Surely if you are completely blind and you run a newspaper, like newsagent stand, a lot of stuff goes missing.
Gotta be getting nicked. Also, he went, oh, you don't see many celebrities around here. I thought, you don't. It's New York. They're everywhere. He's just blind.
Yeah, also, he's like that, yeah, you finally made the front cover. And I'm like, how do you know? did the post really come blind, in Braille?
They're just cataract contact lenses.
He's faking it. He's Kaiser Soze, Andy.
He is, yeah.
Bruce Campbell's reading the paper all about himself, buying 12 copies of the newspaper with him in it.
Why 12?
Vain bastard. Like for family, friends, loved ones. Like if someone comes to visit, have you seen that time that was in the newspaper? Just he's going to be an unbearable dick moving forward. Yeah. But
what is that trench coat he's wearing? He's wearing like tobacco coloured chinos, white trainers, and a trench coat.
It was the early 90s, Andy.
I guess. But
you could do whatever you want. So unfortunately, it becomes a bit too complacent. Like you mentioned earlier on, kind of forgot that there was an undead psychopath stalking the streets who gets his truncheon sword and stabs him right through the back of the neck, right through his newspaper, thus killing Bruce Campbell kind of early in the movie. And one of those moments, if you've never seen the movie before, where you're like, did you just kill Bruce Campbell? Bruce Campbell does not die in many movies that I can think of.
Billion as well. That's a bit of a scam.
Yeah, like just like what? And the news agent, as he's reaching down, brushes past the hand of the maniac cop, and we get a great line later on about his experience touching the hand of the maniac cop.
Yeah, do you know why the maniac cop's hand's cold? It's because he's wearing chainmail, shown earlier on when he fucking grabs a running chainsaw with his hand and nothing happens. That's why his hand's cold.
I love how fucking bonkers, honestly. Like, I am smiling right now thinking about this movie. I watched it last night and it finished and I was like, that I could easily watch this fucking movie again. Arrow Video, if you're listening, you already have Maniac Cop out. Fucking give us Maniac Cop 2. Give us like a bonkers edition of Maniac Cop 2 and I will buy that shit day one. So like you say, like Robert Davi is like, you killed your lover, see? Your lover's dead over there, see?
Yeah, you better watch out.
he basically starts, like, grilling Teresa Mallory, who's like, listen, it's Cordell. It's clearly not me. Yeah, and he's having none of it. McKinley's like, nah, like this. But Susan Riley, for some reason, being a, you know, clinical psychologist, she's the one that starts going, oh, maybe her delusions are real. Maybe he is a real person. So she somehow manages to convince Riley to go on TV and argue with the governor. That's brilliant.
It's also mental as well. Like, they're giving away their tactics to catch him on the television show. You know, or just wait for him to slip up. No, don't, like, discuss that off air.
Don't just say that everyone is a potential target at the moment, but he'll eventually make a mistake and then we'll grab him. Bodies and blood will be spilled, but come
on. Not a conversation to be having on a radio, on a TV show, national telly show, mate.
But the way this is set up is so fucking funny. So the guy's like chatting away to the commish or the governor or whatever. He's just like chatting away, having a bit of fun with him and all the rest. And then he's like that, yeah, our surprise guest, you know, Susan Riley, who's sitting on the same couch, so surely the governor saw her.
not a surprise.
But, like, the camera pans around as if he didn't know she was there. What? Like this, and then she's like, no, it's Cordell. Cordell's still alive, the maniac cop. And he's like, no, no, that's not true. That's
you
a fire.
They do this a couple of times, right, where they do something that's for the benefit of the person on the screen, but it acts like it's for the benefit of the audience or the other way around. Like, there's a scene where they show you the exact same flashback of Cordell's prison thing.
Yes.
As if he's telling it as a story, because that serial killer guy goes, oh, so what happened to you then? And it shows the flashback as if, like, Cordell was just sitting down talking him through it. And you think, no, that's for our benefit, even though we saw it in the first movie. Like,
that's another thing we need to take into account here, is talk about padding out a movie here. This movie is an hour and a half long. The first 7 minutes
are
credits, and the last 3 minutes of the previous movie. And the scene of how Cordell becomes a maniac cop, which is about a 3 minute scene, is played in the middle. So ostensibly, when you take credits front end and back end out and recycled footage out, this movie is about an hour and 15 minutes long.
Yeah.
So, God bless them.
Fine by me, to be honest. I didn't really want it to be any longer.
Plus, you get to see that bitchin' stunt. You get to see the stunts in this movie, by the way. The fire walking in this movie is maybe some of the best I've ever seen in cinema.
Yeah, I mean, they do a recap of the stunt from the end of the first movie just to go, remember that, we're going to top it. We're going to go further. Like, there's a scene in this when the psychologist woman is handcuffed to a car.
Oh, that's one of the funniest fucking things. But it's amazing, though. But
they jump the car off of a ramp with the person still attached. Because I watched it back, right, and I thought, oh, maybe it'll be a dummy, because you can always tell a dummy, because obviously it doesn't move the way a human moves. That's a person still attached to that car when they jump it off of a fucking ramp. That is mental.
Well, let's swing into this scene. So, basically, by this point, the maniac cop's been picking off police officers and letting criminals go for some reason. Once again, doesn't make sense, but let's not think about it.
No, it's meant to be like this sort of really dramatic scene where he, like, kills the store clerk and then hands the gun to the guy.
Yeah.
And then he's like, it wasn't me, it was one of you. You were going to kill him anyway.
Yeah,
it doesn't make sense.
Plus, see, if you're going to shout at the police, it wasn't me, it was one of you, don't do it with a shotgun in your hand.
No, you're asking for trouble. You are in America, remember?
Yeah, you're asking for death, is what you're asking for.
Suicide by cop, it's a well-known thing.
it's the thing. Oh, this will be about the third time I've referenced this in the last 2 weeks. It's the scene from Nightbreed, isn't it? It's like that, it's like... Do you believe me? Of course I believe you, Boone. You're okay. He's got a gun!
Yeah.
Fucking riddled with bullets. It's like the scene from RoboCop.
You've got to be careful, guys. Come on, you're not thinking it through.
Yeah, never think it through. But this. Well, speaking of RoboCop, how much did they rip that scene off? In a convenience store? It's basically RoboCop. You know what I mean? It's the same setup. God bless the fucking B-movies in the 90s, man. They're amazing. So anyway, Teresa Mallory decides that, finally, she decides, like, you know what? I'm getting the fuck out of here. Like that. Not want to be in New York anymore with the maniac cop running around that I told you about. And Susan's like, okay, not a problem. Right, we'll go together. But for someone that has just went on national TV and said, there could be a psycho killer maniac cop zombie running about the place, she then becomes very blasé from this point. So they go in the taxi. Mallory's getting a bit, fidgety. She's like, what are you doing? We'll be fine. The tire then goes flat. And she's like, I'm sure tires go flat all the time. I'm like, you've just been on telly in the previous scene saying psycho killer maniac cop is on the streets. Now you're like that. Oh, these things happen all the time.
She's not worried.
She's not worried. She's signed the same bit of paper that Bruce Campbell signed. You know what I mean?
Yeah. She read it. She read it, didn't she? Went on. Okay.
She believed it. So they're in the car together, and when there's someone following them, so Mallory decides to pick up the pace and drive the car, which loses its tire, and then just starts grinding along, and they eventually get bashed off the road by the maniac cop, who, as you mentioned earlier on, handcuffs Susan Riley to this car parked across the road, then switches the car on and then pushes it down a fucking hill, right? Yeah. And then we jump back, and then we have... But meanwhile, in this scene, we have Mallory unloading about 20 bullets into Cordell's stomach. Now, she's done this before, and she knows that doesn't work. Yeah, she knows it doesn't work, though.
Yeah.
Like, she knows that doesn't work, but she does it anyway. And then she runs off.
He's also seen the piece of paper. I think that thing that Bruce Campbell saw was a magic piece of paper that anyone that saw it just went, oh, it doesn't exist anymore, and just forgot the first movie.
It's part of the Necronomicon.
Yeah.
So basically, Mallory runs across the street. No, she doesn't. She gets flung through a fucking window because once again, oh my god, like Cordell's power is unmatched in this movie. If he grabs you and throws you, you fucking fly for miles.
Yeah, you're on wires and you're just going for a fucking fly, aren't you?
There's a scene later on where he throws someone through one of those partition things in the office at the police station, and this guy goes through about seven.
He does another and another one and another one.
Yeah, and it's like, that's okay. One of them would eventually slow you down. But yeah, so Mallory finds a chainsaw. Meanwhile, we cut to that stunt scene you were talking about where a car that's easily travelling about 100 miles an hour jumps off a fucking... it's a bump while she's kept on to the side. That's one of my... I about pissed myself laughing when I saw that because it's so fucking over the top. It's like watching Maximum Overdrive at the beginning where like the cars are sliding down at maybe about 5 miles an hour on this bridge, but people are being catapulted as if they've been hit with something like 100 miles an hour. Just doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense. But she's attached to this, and then. Like you said, Mallory gets a chainsaw and then comes down on Zadar's hand and nothing.
Just fucking stops it dead. Like, my mate is a tree surgeon. Uh-huh. And, like, his like, special, really expensive, like, fucking safety trousers, they'll only stop a dying chain. A chain where someone's let go of the trigger and the chain's slowing down. Like, the trousers will not stop a foot. Even the special safety trousers won't stop a full-bore chainsaw. She's revving that motherfucker and he grabs it and nothing happens. I was thinking, like, why?
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense at all. But, you know, the movie's, by this point, already proved that it's goofy as balls. So we might as well continue on with it. Yeah. At this point, McKinley's... on board, he now believes that the maniac cops come back mostly because Susan Riley manages to get into a car and the car that she's handcuffed to and survives, which is like a good thing. And so they're trying to convince the mayor, a guy who's still kind of not really picking up on it, but we're going to work on that. And the maniac cop decides that he's going to show up at the police department. And this was the bit you said that you had got muddled up with the previous movie.
Yeah, I knew there was a massacre in the second one as well, but no, this is the fucking one, man. This is a great police massacre. And the way they frame it as well is fucking awesome, because it's a load of coppers, like, doing down at the gun range.
Yeah.
Obviously shooting out into the gun range, and then all of a sudden they just get all shot, like, to bits. And then, like, Cordell just comes walking out, like, you know, out of the shadows of the end of the gun range.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty fucking cool. I don't think I've ever seen that before. And then just like works his way up the stairs into the police station, just starts going fucking berserk, like blowing people away, throwing people through like seven partitions. Fucking brilliant, isn't it?
The stunt work's amazing. And not only that, do we get all that. Cordell earlier on kind of killed two cops and set this serial rapist killer dude kind of free, who is now Cordell's buddy
apparently.
Yeah, which kind of feels like a weird alliance, but Cordell's gonna has this master plan of you know, busting out these criminals, getting them into a transport vehicle, and then driving the transport vehicle to the prison that he was held in, Sing Sing. At first, it doesn't make sense why he's doing it. Out with, they're just going to release all the prisoners. Like,
yeah, because I thought that doesn't make any fucking sense. Surely he's going for revenge, is he not?
It wasn't at first, though, until he got his apology. And then he was like, wait one second, I'll become a good guy again. Like, the end of fucking Return of
the Jedi. I thought that was his plan all along, because obviously he's never told the guy that's what his plan is. I think the other guy's just assumed that, hasn't he? The serial guy, because he only ever really just says, Cordo! Sounds a bit fucking... This sounds like an old lady. Cordell!
Cordell!
Reminds me of in Hannibal.
Cordell! I was telling him, Cordell! Cordell!
Why don't you just push him in? You can always say it was me.
Cordell!
But it's a good plan. It makes sense. You know, he's got revenge on the city now, so let's go and get revenge on the people that fucking like cut you to bits in prison.
Yep. So he manages to get a crew together. They all jump in this transport vehicle and drive towards Sing Sing. Meanwhile, Robert Davi's character is berating I've just confirmed it's the deputy commissioner. So he's berating them. Listen, you. And then we get some more story. So, like, in the first movie, the insinuation was cops had been heavy-handed. They were getting some bad press. So, as the fall guy for this, they basically put Cordell forward as the guy that we're going to, you know, throw under the bus as the symbol of police brutality.
Yeah.
In this movie, they adapt it slightly. So, Cordell was actually a super honest cop.
Like Serpico.
Yeah, he was like maybe a bit heavy-handed, but, you know, justice will out, so to speak. And all these people, the creepy, potentially homosexual couple from the first movie of the chief and the commissioner, and all the people that he was hunting down were cops that were on the take. And Cordell must have been getting too close, according to Robert Davi's character. And as a result, they made an example out of him by putting him into Sing Sing, knowing fine well that if he went away there, he probably wouldn't come back.
Yeah, and that makes more sense, really, doesn't it, than the first explanation we get from the first movie.
Yeah, I kind of like that one.
It's better, yeah.
Yeah, justifies the revenge aspect, really, you know what I mean, a bit more. So eventually, Deputy Commissioner Edward Doyle... He was right, I'll make things good and all the rest. So the maniac cop manages to infiltrate the prison and is kind of working his way through a couple of different bits. Meanwhile, his serial rapist sidekick thinks that they are going to be releasing all these killers and it's going to be great and it's going to be awesome. And then over the tannoy comes the deputy commissioner, who admits to all his wrongdoing, apologises, says they're going to reopen the case into Cordell, which may have been better served when he was still alive.
Maybe.
Just a little bit. Cordell hears this, and this kind of sparks the fire, no pun intended, for the next scene, under him to really ramp up his revenge. And he breaks into the kind of prison area, the general population area that he was walking down in his flashback sequence. And I will give them credit, if it's not the same actors, it is actors that look very similar to the actors in the flashback from the first movie.
Yeah, because they even do a flashback to show you which one it is.
Which, you don't have to do that in a movie like this, but once again...
When we've already seen the flashback once already, you need to see it again. It's like the fucking thing in Saw you were telling me about, like the book, the kids in the... Yeah, we know.
That scene.
You only showed me that 10 minutes ago, I've got it.
Yeah, 3 minutes ago in Saw. They showed you 3 minutes ago. That was the thing.
I've watched it. I still haven't fucking made about it, because we were saying how good, like Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
If you miss something, tough shit. Like, it's, you know, a lot of it's really subtle and they don't explain everything in Rick and Morty. There's quite often when it'll end and you have to kind of work out what's happened yourself.
Yeah.
And you don't get that anymore. Those days are gone in movies. They have to spoon feed everything and make it completely fucking idiot proof.
Of course, because people are idiots, Andy. The fact that they got the cast back, these people.
One of them's Kevin Durand, I think, you know.
I think you're right, actually.
Not one of the ones that actually kills him, I don't think. Well, like when they're in prison and they're all just kind of looking down, fucking hell, look who it is. Yeah, I think that's an uncredited Kevin Durand.
One of them marked in here, according to IMDb, is Danny Trejo as well.
Yeah, it is.
The brief cameo. The maniac cop gets lit up with a Molotov cocktail, which apparently just everyone in Sing Sing just has access to in their cell.
They've all been making hooch.
If it's that, they've got lighters and cloth. So they light them up. And then like the pièce de résistance of this movie really kicks off, where we have about a 5-minute scene of a zombie walking around on fire, just either killing people or grabbing them and burning them to death.
Yep.
And it's kind of fucking amazing. I mean, I love this. I think this to me is... Yeah, on this level, this movie like wins me over 100%. So yeah,
it's a good finale. I can't argue with that.
He grabs a guy and throws him from the ground to the second story of the police station while the guy is on fire, burning the two inmates above him that he touches. I'm like, this is fucking great. And then he finally gets the last guy he wants. So the serial rapist dude finally realizes that, guess what? This guy's not helping me. This guy's a capper, see? So Cordell grabs him and then runs at a fucking brick wall.
He's brilliant. Straight out of Universal Soldier.
Oh, it's so good. Grabs him, runs him as a human shield into a fucking brick wall, which explodes out, and the two of them fall into the water. And that's the end of the movie, almost, because we have a little kind of finale scene. We all know where this is going. It's the official police burial of Cordell, who's now a hero.
No way would he get an honourable burial
that. No, he fucking
literally, everyone has seen the magic piece of paper that Bruce Campbell signed. Everyone's forgotten what's happened.
It's like, yeah, right, we unfairly put him to Sing Sing, and that balances out the scale of the multiple murders of the day.
That's right, he's killed innocent people, he's killed criminals, he's killed police. Like, he's literally a rampage. I mean, I think the body count in this movie is 33 alone. There's got to be about 20 more in the first one. Well, it's fine, though. It's fine. We've apologised.
Remember when he grabbed that guy and shoved his head into concrete and drowned him in concrete? Well, it doesn't matter. So, yes, so he gets an official police burial, and Robert Davi at the end thinks he sees someone, but he's not quite sure, throws the badge on the coffin, and then we get this protracted scene as it swings down. And right at the very end, Cordell's hand bashes through the coffin.
The parry scene, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, did not know that was coming at all, to grab the badge and pull it in. And that's the end of the movie. This movie fucking rocks, Andy Blockley.
It's pretty fucking good, isn't it, man?
So fucking entertaining. Yeah,
this is what you want from a sequel. Like, the stunt work alone is fucking mental. Obviously, I've keep referencing like Jackie Chan stuff because I've just recently really got into like a load of Jackie Chan's like older stuff as well. Like Police Story is probably my favourite one. The original fucking Police Story. Man, the stunt work in that is just off the fucking chain.
Yeah.
The stunt work in this is fucking amazing for a Hollywood movie.
It blows my mind that this movie, like, one, exists in the way it does. Like, this one bucks the trend of so many kind of horror sequels, and that what it tries to do is it basically tries to replicate the story, carry it on, but at the same time update, revive, make it more relevant to what audiences want to see, and just goes loopy. It's no surprise to me that Bill Lustig, a guy who has a great career in cinema, has said that Maniac Cop is his best movie. It's his favourite movie. He said, his exact words, it was a film where I felt as though myself and my crew were firing all cylinders. I think we made a terrific B-movie. And I would totally agree with it. I think the horror takes a backseat to the action, but in a way that I totally get behind. I think it's ridiculous, it's over the top, and it's wonderful. And like you say, the stunt work alone really elevates it above a lot of the movies.
It's mental. The film literally opens with someone being thrown out of a window, and it ends with two guys fucking diving off a building, set on fire and landing in a fucking van in a police vehicle. It's fucking bonkers.
It's absolutely brilliant. It'll be interesting to see where our scoring comes down, because we both gave Maniac Cop a 4.5. In terms of Netflix grades, one hated it, two didn't like it, three liked it, four really liked it, and five loved it. I might have to rate this one higher. I loved this movie. Is it perfect? No. Is the story better? No. But the Netflix grading doesn't have to make me analyse it, you know, the exact modes in a movie. It just has to go back on a feel. And everything that detracted from the overall greatness of the movie did not detract from how much I loved watching this movie. This is a 5 from me. I genuinely am shocked to be saying that. I thought we were going to see a reduction in quality. This to me is the, right, is it the better horror movie? No. Is it the better movie? I think yes.
I think you could be right. I mean, I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5, same as I think I'll give to my Natcop 1. But yeah, they do every, you know, for a sequel, they kind of do everything right. And because it's a sequel as well, you hit the ground running. So I think, you know, like you say, there is a lot of filler in there. So it's probably only like a 75 minute movie when you take all that away.
Yeah.
But what's wrong with that?
You know,
like, we watch so many films now. We talked about Tusk last week, and like, there's so many films now, like, they drag out.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're 25 minutes to 35 minutes longer than they ever should even dream of being.
Yeah, agreed. A
film like this should also never fucking dream of being any longer than about an hour and a half, and it's not. It's about an hour 15 all told with, you know, the new footage, and that's perfect. That's exactly what you want. Like, they ramp everything up. The body count's higher, the action's higher, the stunt work's incredible. Like, the acting and everything is just as good. The effects and that are just as good. And I think it is a little bit more enjoyable. You might be right. I think I'm not going to give it a full 5.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I completely love it. I probably won't watch this again now for a fair while. But it is a very fucking good sequel. 4.5 stars out of 5. And I think you'd be hard pushed to find any sequel to a movie from the 80s that's going to score that high.
Agreed. Yeah. I think. Yeah. I was kind of blown away. Kind of blown away. We have one more movie that we have to cover in this trilogy, which will be our final look at the third Maniac Cop movie, which I believe is The Badge of Silence is the third one.
Badge of Silence. I think I've seen it once.
Yeah, I've seen it once. I hated it because this was the introduction of voodoo, which was a popular theme in the 90s.
It's mental, isn't it? Like, stuff has to be in there, sometimes to its benefit and sometimes to the detriment.
Yeah.
Like, stunt work was massive, obviously. Like, Police Story was 1985. And then obviously, you know, Hollywood's trying to emulate really impressive stunts for action movies, which they, you know, very successfully did in the sort of late 80s, early 90s. So we've got great stunt work, brilliant. What we've also got is a Maniac Cop rat.
Yeah.
Not so good. Like, not every, you know, some of the, like good stunt work will never age. It is literally timeless. The same as good practical effects, it's timeless. Mm-hmm. When you pop a rap in a film,
and
the rap has been written specifically for the film and includes the word Maniac Cop.
Yeah.
Oh.
Unless your movie's called New Jack City, you can't do it.
No, you can't do it. Even unless it's Above the Rim, Boys in the Hood, New Jack City, forget it. So now, obviously, we've got another thing that's big in the sort of early 90s, voodoo. So we'll put that in there.
Yep.
We'll explain why his hand pops out at the end and grabs the badge, because he was voodoo summoned to do it. So look forward to that.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that one's going to be shorter. I'm hoping we're only going to get like an hour of new footage from this.
You never know. It'll be interesting tackling that one. That review will be coming in the next couple of weeks. As always, Andy Blockley, can I thank you for giving up a bit of your Sunday morning for joining me to chat about some movies. I'm having a ball doing this series, and I know that the next movie...
Turned out pretty well, hasn't it, in the end? Like, I wasn't sure how it was going to be, but I think even if number 3 is shit, it's still going to be a good fun to take the piss out of, isn't it?
Agreed, man. Right, I'm going to take my final break of this show. When I come back, I'm closing it out right after this.
You're listening to the podcast Under the Stairs.
And you've been listening to the podcast Under the Stairs. This has been episode 138, the second part of our Maniac Cop trilogy series with my guest Andy Blockley. On this one, we looked at Maniac Cop 2. And I will be honest, I am kind of shocked and surprised that we are more than halfway through it, and at the moment I'm loving it. Absolutely loving it. That second movie is so much fun. That is the epitome of beer, popcorn, ass on couch, TV on, set yourself in a comfy position to be absolutely entertained by ridiculous nonsense. The epitome of ridiculous nonsense. So much fun in that movie. Can't believe I gave it a 5, but I stand by it. I'm all about the, you know, if a movie... A movie doesn't have to be the most highbrow intellectual movie. If it ticks the boxes and gives me what I want, then, you know, it's going to get high reviews. And I loved it. I can't wait to watch it again. I'm actually staying away at a cabin in May, and I'm thinking that there are a few people that will be going with me that have never seen Maniac Cop 1 or 2. And I'm thinking double bill it over a barbecue. Might be the idea. That might be the way forward. So, thanks very much to my guest, Andy Blockley, for joining me. We have one more movie to look at, which is Part 3, Badge of Silence, which will be coming up in a few weeks' time. And like I said at the start of this episode, we are in a 3-episode Teapots week. This is the first of 3 episodes dropping this week. Thursday may or may not be Bazzy's Takeover show, depending if we can get our time synced up together to get that one recorded for your listening pleasure. If it's not, then it will be the kickoff of Movie Club for April, and vice versa. If the Baz Takeover show doesn't come out on Thursday, it will come out a week today, which is, you know, Monday the 9th of April. And on Sunday this week, you are getting the 4th installment, disc number 4 of my 88 Films Italian Collection series, looking at Blast Fighter, which should be fun. I'd never seen it before. It looks bonkers. It could be crazy. It could be a lot of fun. Looking forward to the laughs, the lols, as the kids say. But yeah, looking forward to that. As always, there is a multitude of ways to check out the podcast Under the Stairs. We always tell you to go across and check us out on Apple Podcasts. Come across, subscribe to the feed, that way you get the episodes as and when they drop, and access to the entire back catalogue of Teapots content. Super simple. Also, leave us a rating and a review. We've not had many in a while, but they are legitimately the best way to support what we do on the podcast Under the Stairs. In terms of the ratings, 5 stars, for example, the more of them we get, the higher up the iTunes charts we're pushed for people to find our show. But reviews, equally important, they tell people why you should check out podcasts Under the Stairs. They're your words and not mine. My words would be, check out this show, it's the greatest show ever, but I am biased, I'm the one recording it and trying to sell it. You guys, it could be something simple, like Duncan clearly sounds like he has a 12-inch penis. Listen to it for that reason alone. It could be, Baz is my spirit animal, which I believe I quoted Myron Schmidt from saying, that you could say that if you want. Put down your comments, let people know why you check out the show. It takes a couple of seconds to do, it doesn't cost you anything. It's the best way to support what we do on Podcast Under the Stairs. Another way to support what we do is the merch. That's right, at the start of this episode, I announced that we finally launched a merch page, which has 2 different posters. It has our Void poster from the second year of podcasting, designed by horror artist extraordinaire Graham Humphreys. What can I say? It's a fucking phenomenal poster, and we don't have a ton of them left, but I'm looking forward to seeing them go out to people, and hopefully you'll send us pictures back, tweet us with them on your wall. We also have our Baz V Horror poster, which was designed by the fantastic Joshua Kelly, both of them up on our merch page, as well as our T-Pugs pin, Harry the Pug enamel podcast Under the Stairs pin. We're about halfway through our stock of them, and then when they're done, they're done. So you can buy them as well. You go to teaputscast.bigcartel.com. That's teaputscast.bigcartel.com. Or what you can do, ladies and gents, for those diligently unable to understand my accent, which will be pretty much everyone in the world, you can go to teaputscast.com and click the merch tab, which will take you to that page. Order some merch. The money's going directly back into the podcast to help us with hosting fees and various bits and bobs that we'll be doing throughout the year, including more merch campaigns, which I'm currently planning. I'm looking forward to putting them out. You can check the podcast Under the Stairs on Stitcher Smart Radio, SoundCloud, also on TuneIn and Google Play. Visit our website, teaputscast.com, and interact with the Baz and the twin prongs of social media sexiness, Instagram and Twitter. Both can be followed at teaputscast. Come across to the best goddamn Facebook group page on the planet. It's facebook.com/groups/teaputscast. Interact with myself and all the fantastic listeners over there. So the podcast Under the Stairs will return in a couple of days on Thursday with either a takeover show or kicking off movie club. We'll find out which one it is probably by about Wednesday, because that's what we do. And then, like I say, coming back on Sunday for disc number 4 of our 88 Films Italian Collection. Wherever you are, whatever the time zone is, and whatever you're up to in this big, bad world of ours, please take care of yourselves out there. This is Duncan McLeish broadcasting live from Under the Stairs, and I'm signing off.
This is important stuff. I mean, these kids are being screwed as a whole generation of them. They've got